Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
Oh, that first hour flew by. Amtrak just zipped right past your town. Live in Los Angeles, it's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, FS1. Beautiful night in Los Angeles, Orange County, unless you're a Dodger or an Angel fan. Two great teams, two lousy bullpens. Nothing ruins a good night than a bad bullpen in Los Angeles. And we got a couple of stinkers. Dodgers can't close games out. Angels bullpen's a mess. That's life. Joy Taylor's joining me. Matt Nagy, coach of the Bears, in a couple of minutes. You know, Joy, I am not a fan of people getting fired. I'm a believer. Everybody has, I understand, like, every year you got to get rid of 5% of your business, they say. But I tend to think there's a place for everybody in a business.
Sure.
Unless they're just abusive and you know, rotten people. But you can mostly find a place for everybody within a company. Sometimes they're just in a wrong division. They've got a boss. The personalities don't click. I've had that before. I don't like a boss.
Not they don't have the right role.
They don't have the right role. So I do think it's kind of up to companies. I don't think you have to get rid of as many people as you think. Sometimes, and by the way, some people are just not built for corporate life. They want to do their own thing. So some people leave on their own. But there's this feeling now in Green Bay that it's between Aaron Rodgers. He would stay if they got rid of the GM. A lot of people are saying that. And the GM is Brian Gutekunst, who kind of whiffed on this whole thing. So Nick Wright came on the show yesterday and talked about, hey, GM took a big swing, missed, get rid of him.
Aaron Rodgers has actually made this incredibly easy for the Packers. You just fire Brian Gutekunst. It's not that hard. And by the way, oh, Nick, that's unfair. What has he done? I'll tell you exactly what he's done. He took a massive swing and a massive risk to remake the team in his image last year in the draft. And Gutekunst made a bet that Rodgers would show significant decline in 2020 and that he would look like a genius for being ahead of it. Well, sometimes when you make a big bet, you lose.
All of this is fair. Brian Gutekunst severely underestimated Aaron's personality and reaction to the pick. He underestimated Aaron's ability because he won MVP. They thought he was eroding. And he underestimated the backlash. Everybody's kind of pro-Aaron, anti-Packer. So if you draft Jordan Love, you need to consider a lot of things. What's Aaron going to be like? Can Jordan Love play fast if this blows up? The media fan backlash. That matters, by the way. Do I change the way I draft? If it blows up, I can't have a bunch of developmental offensive linemen. I need players that help Jordan Love fast. And if you look when they drafted Jordan Love, if you look at the last two drafts, they've taken a backup running back, six offensive linemen, only one a high pick, all development, a backup tight end, a quarterback that won't play. I mean, they've taken a lot of a cornerback from Georgia that's a reach. He's a developmental first-round corner. They've taken a lot of developmental guys. Well, if Aaron leaves, you don't need developmental guys. You need players. Or this trade's going to look worse. So I can make the argument Brian Gutekunst has butchered this. He underestimated Aaron's reaction, Jordan's ability to play sooner. They made the draft last couple of years more developmental than instant guys who can help. But I wouldn't fire him. And here's why. Because Brian went to Wisconsin. He is, except for 1 year, he was a scout somewhere else. He's a Packer for life. He does a fine job. He fits their nature. He is what they are. He's going to work for Green Bay for another 20 years. He looks 21 as it is. I don't know how old he is, probably 40. He's a Packer for life. I mean, when Green Bay, Ted Thompson left, they didn't even interview a candidate outside the building. So he is of the nature of Green Bay. Aaron's not. Remember that movie Shawshank Redemption? Some birds are not meant to be caged. Their feathers are too bright. Aaron's got an ego. Packers are egoless. Aaron's California cool. They wear cheeseheads. This was never going to work. It's remarkable it's lasted 16 years. I think so much of this is Brian Gutekunst is a nice guy, a Packer for life. They just didn't get it. Of course they didn't get it. Of course he can't relate to Aaron Rodgers. Of course he massively underestimated how Aaron would react. They were cheeseheads. This is the Green Bay way. He's a Packer. He's a Badger. I'm not taking a shot at him. But he will be around for 25 years. He perfectly, he'll never have to say, this is why I drafted an offensive lineman in the fifth round who's 3 years from playing. That's what Green Bay does. They're great at it. That doesn't fit what Aaron is, which is, I need to win now. I'm 37. I've had two collarbone surgeries. So I don't, first of all, I don't like saying fire people. But in this instance, you're talking about an older player and a younger general manager. And one of them fits the ethos, the work ethic, the vision of the Packers. Just keep him around. He butchered this one. You do have a right to butcher stuff. Every GM, Bill Polian, six-time exec of the year, butchered picks. This is imperfect. Belichick can't draft a wide receiver to save his life. He butchered it. Jordan's not as good and prepared as we thought. It ticked off Aaron Rodgers. Your last couple of drafts have been more about developmental players than guys that can help you, and you keep going to NFC championships. Get dudes. Look at San Francisco 2 years ago. Look at Tampa now. You don't have enough dudes. So, I don't know. Of course they screwed this up. I don't think Aaron's ever been ideally built for Green Bay. And I think Brian Gutekunst is Green Bay. So I wouldn't get rid of him. Matt Nagy, the Bears, around the corner. This came out, by the way. So FoxBet, FanDuel, they wait until kind of after the draft usually to give you the over-unders. Now, gambling is not for everybody. Over-unders basically mean FoxBet will give you a number, 17-game season, they'll give you 9.5 Cleveland. And it is you as a gambler, as a bettor, that says, I think they're going to win 10 or more. Then you bet what's called the over. If you're like, I don't know, that defense, I don't know, that division's good, then I think they're going to win less than 9.5. They're going to go the under. So what we did as a staff is we took all the FoxBet over-under numbers. This is what they're predicting the standings to be. Now, in many instances, teams in the same division had the same number. So we went even deeper. Alex did a very good job on this. Then he went and looked at the FoxBet division winning odds. And so even though teams would both be 9.5 in the same division, one would have slightly better odds, Rams over the Niners in the NFC West. So we put them ahead. And then in some instances, we got down to Chargers in New England, and it was almost the same, but then we went even deeper into other odds about making the playoffs, and the Chargers were a slightly better bet than New England to make the playoffs, so we used that. So using the data from FoxBet, here's how they see the playoffs happening. So let's do the AFC East. Let's do the AFC first. So here's the AFC. We're done with coaching. We're done with free agency. We're done with the draft. Buffalo, New England, Miami, New York. Bills win the division. New England second. Miami third. New York fourth. I mostly agree. I do think Buffalo over is the best bet in that division. Let's go to the AFC North. They have Baltimore winning the division. Cleveland, Pittsburgh, and Cincinnati. Now, I think Cleveland is going to win the division. However, I do believe if you look at their schedule, they got New England on it, Green Bay on it, Kansas City on it. I want to wait until next Wednesday night to see the schedule. Because it could be, if they get Andy Reid early, you know, Packers, New England late, it may not work out. But I would switch that. I would have Cleveland 1, Baltimore 2. I think they're both decent over bets. Now let's go to the AFC South. I think this Indy wins it. Tennessee next. I'm not as high on Tennessee. I think they take a step back. Jacksonville third, Houston fourth. I'm fine with the order. I just disagree with FoxBet. I think Tennessee and Jacksonville are a little closer than we think, but the order is fine. And then the AFC West, I'm totally in line with it. Kansas City wins it by a couple of games. Chargers next. I'd bet the over on the Chargers. Denver and then Las Vegas. So I don't have a problem with that. So now let's go to the NFC. NFC East over-unders. Dallas winning it by a game over Washington. Giants third, Philadelphia fourth. I'm okay with the order. I am. I think Washington-Dallas can both go over. I think they play to the last two weekends to decide it. Washington, great defense, great coach. Dallas, average coach, great offense. But I do think their defense will be better. So I'm okay with the order. I'd have to sleep on it. But I do think Dallas, Washington, New York, Philadelphia works for me. Let's now go to the NFC North. Now, the Packers are actually off the board. You can't bet them now. But this order, I'm okay with. I think if Chicago knew when Justin Fields was going to play, I could like him at second, but they don't. And I think Minnesota is an absolute bounce-back team in the NFL. I've said that, so the order doesn't bother me. Then we go to the NFC South. It's Tampa, New Orleans, Atlanta, Carolina. Now, I don't necessarily have a problem with the order. I think New Orleans, like the Titans, is not as good as the odds makers think. They don't know who the quarterback is. They had to get rid of some players, gambled a little in the draft. I wouldn't be surprised if Atlanta and Carolina, who are going to have very robust offenses this year, one of those ends up second. I'm not bothered by the order, but the Saints and the Titans, I'm a little cool on. And then we go to the NFC West, Rams, San Francisco, Seattle, Arizona. I think what you're betting on here is Stafford is healthier than Jimmy Garoppolo. I think that's the bet. And by the way, they're both at 10.5 wins, but the Niners are plus 200 to win the division. That's not as good as the Rams, who are plus 175 to win the division. So here are the playoff teams. This is the way it works. According to Fox Bet, in the AFC, it's Kansas City, Baltimore, Buffalo, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Tennessee, Los Angeles. Six of those I agree with. I'm not sure Tennessee's my pick. I'll wait for a while, but I'm not sure Tennessee gets in. I think they take a step back. In the NFC, the playoff picture is Tampa, Green Bay. Again, that's off the board right now. Rams, Cowboys, Niners, Seattle, New Orleans. Again, my gut feeling, it's not the Saints. I think in their division, Atlanta and Carolina are going to score a lot of points. If New Orleans has a couple of injuries on that defensive side, they're not the same team. So there you go. That is the prediction. I mostly agree with it. Cooler on the Saints and the Titans. Like the Chargers and the Browns a little more than Fox Bet or Vegas does. Matt Nagy, coach of the Bears, I'm told, joining us next segment.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
You're still running your book on QuickBooks? Make that quicksand. Bigger your company grows, the faster you sync with outdated software. Right now, NetSuite offering one-of-a-kind financing programs. Go to netsuite.com/Herd, netsuite.com/Herd. There was a lot of talk about New England moving up in the draft, and they did not. We speculated that Washington, we didn't love their quarterback situation, but we liked their team and their coach. They should move up in the draft. They did not. The Chicago Bears were lightly discussed as moving up, and then they did to get Justin Fields, who dropped slightly, I guess, in the draft. And the coach of the Bears, Matt Nagy, is now joining us live. So first of all, it's exciting. You move up, you get a quarterback. So let's just take our audience, Matt. Good to see you again. Kind of to, had you made a decision? You know, this draft is so crazy. I talked to multiple general managers. Some preach patience. Others are like, go get what you like. Had you made a decision before the draft, or was it one of those, oh, wait a minute, time out. He didn't go to blank. Kind of take me to that process.
Yeah, Colin, first of all, it's great seeing you, as always, and talking football. What I would say is this. I think the fun part of heading into the draft and going through it is just going through all the different scenarios that can happen, really, at every specific position. And so it's like getting ready for a game, just trying to make sure situationally you're prepared for those fourth and one calls, the four-minute calls to get a first down and win the game. And so we go through every scenario. Hey, what if this guy falls? What if that guy falls? And within that, we all go through our evaluation process of the guys we like. And so you never know how it's going to go up until literally that minute. And the rush that you get when it does happen, it's like the best feeling in the world. And, you know, like you said, it happened to, you know, fall a certain way. And we were so ecstatic and happy about it. And, you know, we couldn't have predicted it 3 hours earlier. But in the end, it's definitely a situation that we discussed a lot about, and it ended up falling our way.
So take me to the moment that you and Ryan had decided, because this was a good quarterback draft. Was there a workout, a pro day, a film session when you and Ryan sat down and went, boy, if this kid's available, because the word is you fell in love with him a while back.
Yeah. So this is really that story begins last year. Really a little over a year ago when we were discussing 2020 prospects, I was with Ryan Day. And at the end of it, as the story goes, I just asked him about that quarterback. And he said, hey, man, this kid's a generational talent. And that stuck with me. And you never know where things are going to go a year later, but that always stuck with me. And so as we get into the draft process and Ryan and I start looking at quarterbacks and the rest of our scouts and personnel, there's so many great quarterbacks in this class. And so we got to do due diligence and make sure we see who we like, why we like them, compare them. That's the best, Colin, is when you're watching a guy and you keep coming into Ryan's room or Ryan keeps coming into my room and like, did you see this play? Did you see that play? Man, he can do this. He can do that. And not just for Justin, but for all of these guys. And so in the end, you know, this is what we feel really great about with Justin. And he's just such an exciting player that can do so many things, and we're looking forward to the future with him.
Is it a dilemma that Andy Dalton plays one way, Ryan is or Justin is more hyper-athletic? Do you have to have – take me to this. I'm just naive here. Do you? And I was just talking to Eric Mangini off the air, and he said, boy, if I had the Niners, I would put in some plays for Trey Lance just regardless. I wouldn't want to face Trey Lance in the red zone. He's running around. How do you have two quarterbacks, with, I would argue, one's much more dynamic athletically. Is it a challenge for you to do that, deal with that?
Yeah, that's a real question, and that's legit. And what we need to do as coaches, as we develop this this identity that we want to create throughout training camp, the off season, and into the season, is just that. We got to be able to work to Andy's strengths, and then we got to be able to also work to Justin's strengths. And there's going to be times that we see there's things that Justin does really well that Andy might not do as well, and vice versa. But we would be crazy to not take what Justin has done so great in his 2 years at Ohio State and concepts and plays that he likes and plays he feels comfortable with and help him get going when it is his time and when he is playing. And so, and it's the same thing with Andy too, you know, coming in for the first time this year and learning concepts that he's done in the last 9-10 years of his career. So, but they are different. That's what makes it fun. And I think it's our job to make sure we adapt to the strengths of each quarterback.
When did you tell Andy Dalton? When did you tell him, hey, Andy, we love you, but we're going to draft a quarterback? How'd it go?
So the day of the draft, earlier that day, Andy and I caught up to discuss a lot of different things. And one of the topics was the draft. And I told him, you know, because we didn't know. We said, hey, there's a lot of different things that could happen today being round one and the rest of the weekend. What I will tell you is that every position is open, and including quarterback. And so I can't predict when that may happen. But if it does, I just want you to know the amount of respect that we have for you, where you stand with us and this team moving forward. And that that's real. I think that's very, very important to have with your players, is build that trust and that honesty and that openness. We're all grown men here, and we all understand how this thing goes. He was a true pro about it. He understood it. And then later, after it did happen and we traded for Justin and got him, I called him that night and I explained to him. And any natural human being is going to be a little bit, I don't know what the word is, maybe discouraged or frustrated slightly, because he's a competitor. But at the same time, Andy's a true pro, and he's going to do everything he can to help Justin out and help the Bears out. And ultimately, the biggest thing of all of this is we got to make sure we as coaches do what's best for the Bears organization and also for both Andy and Justin. And we'll put a great plan together. We'll believe in it. I was fortunate enough to live it in 2017. Is it the same? Yes. Is it slightly different? Yes. and we know that. And so we'll just see where it takes us.
Listen, it is, and this isn't a criticism. This is a reality. If I coach the Bears, and this is, Chicago is a pressure town. I mean, one second Joe Madden's the world's smartest baseball guy. The next minute, he's not managing the Cubs. It's just the reality of Chicago. It's a great sports town. People are engaged. And, Matt, you got to win, and that's a tough division. Mike Zimmer can coach. LaFleur can coach. You got a new quarterback now in Detroit. Psychologically, you get into a season. You're 4-4, and you're thinking to yourself, I'm going to battle here. God, I love my job. My family loves Chicago. Is there a little psychology with, you got to win in Chicago now? And how do you reconcile that with, is Justin ready? Is he not? We got to win. My job's on the line. That's a real pressure, right? That's real, right?
No doubt about it. And I think that is why I'm in this position. And the one thing that Ryan and I and myself, because I'm in that during the season, it's going to be myself making the decision, is you understand that whatever decision is made, it's not going to be made because of Matt Nagy. It's not going to be made because of Ryan Pace. It's going to be made because of it's best for the Chicago Bears organization and it's best for Justin Fields. And so I think we all, again, all of us live in that instant gratification world where everything, you know, we want it to happen right away, right now. But there's so many steps that go into this process of making sure that we do this thing the right way with Justin, for Justin and for the Chicago Bears. I feel very confident in the coaches that we have around us to be able to develop him with a great strategy of things that we've done in the past and things that we're going to change moving forward this year with that. But we got to make sure that we all understand if and when that time does come for Justin to be ready, and we don't know how that may happen, that he is ready. Because the worst thing we can do is put him in when he's not ready and ruin him, and which ruins the Bears. And so we want to make sure that we do this so that he has a very successful entry into this league. He plays with confidence. He's a winner, which he's always been. And then ultimately, in the end, he's the best thing for the Chicago Bears, plain and simple.
Yeah, I'm watching him run around. He can really run. It'd be fun. It'd be fun to be a coach and have a guy that can run around and do some things nobody else in the league can do. It's great seeing you. You know, I'm in Chicago here in a couple of weeks. You could do worse than take me to dinner. That would not be
worse. We got to make it happen, man, for sure. Absolutely.
All right, Matt. Good seeing you.
Thanks for having me. Take care, Colin.
You bet. Matt Nagy, coach of the Chicago Bears. They made the playoffs. It's a team that's got real players. They went and got an offensive tackle. They went and got a quarterback. And that's a weird team in that in the preseason, you'd play them both. Like Andy Dalton needs starts. So in the preseason, the Bears will probably be a pretty good preseason team. Like you have to play these guys. You want one to develop, and the other one, you want to be ready for the opener. In a division where I think and I've said this, I don't think Green Bay is a Super Bowl team, even if Aaron comes back. I just don't think. You know what I always say? More noise, fewer wins. The noisiest offseason, take two wins away.
Well, they weren't a Super Bowl team the last 2 years.
And then, yeah.
And pretty decent team, so.
You know, I was thinking about this, too. People, no, I'm not going to talk about this yet. I'm going to save it to tomorrow. No, it's just too good. It's worth developing.
Okay.
I have to think it out.
Okay.
I just can't wing it here. Joy with the news. No.
Turn on the news. This is the Herdline News.
All right, this is kind of interesting. The odds of Julio Jones getting traded seem to be getting higher. Peter King recently revealed on his podcast that after talking to Falcons GM Terry Fontenot, he got the sense that Julio might be more than likely to be traded.
Because Julio Jones wasn't traded on draft weekend. I don't think that means that he won't be traded. Obviously, the Falcons are basically in cap jail right now, and they could clear an awful lot of space by trading Julio Jones June 2 or after, meaning they could separate his cap hit into 2 years instead of taking it all now.
So Peter added that the Ravens, the Dolphins...
Dolphins, they have receivers. That doesn't seem right to me.
Yeah, but they don't have
Jalen Waddle, Will Fuller, Devontae Parker. They have a tight end they like. They just drafted another tight end.
The Raiders and the Patriots could all be interested parties.
Raiders need defense.
Yes, they do.
Now, New
England. They do, but you could see the Raiders making this move. I mean, you, come on.
Let me think about this a second. Because Julio can play, obviously, still. He's expensive.
I think he would be great with the Ravens.
But they did draft a wide receiver early, and yeah, I think later.
But
I think
they're still receiving Julio Jones. So Atlanta is currently $14 million over the salary cap with dead cap included. So his contract's $23.1 million. His cap hit is $23.1 million this year. So he only played 9 games due to injury last year, but had 51 catches, 771 yards, and 3 touchdowns. He's entering his 11th season, and he's 13th amongst all wide receivers and from Pro Football Focus last season.
This is great, Joy. There are so many great receivers in the league now. I can't even think of a team that needs one for $14 million. I can't think of one. Because I think Baltimore has solved their issue. Because they went and got Sammy Watkins and drafted a first-round receiver. I can't think of a team that needs...
I would still say that the Patriots could use someone like Julio
now,
Jones.
Now, I'll throw this out at you.
Well, no. You want the Fox Bet odds for week one?
All right, let me see.
So Falcons are minus 500, obviously the favorites. Lions plus 700. Is very interesting.
Oh, how about this one? I just thought of it. Chicago. Allen Robinson. They don't have a second. That's one of the few. I mean, Tariq Cohen comes back. So they got two backs I like. They have the tight end out of Notre Dame I like. They have Allen Robinson. They could use a second receiver.
Jacksonville's plus 1,000.
Now, that's not terrible either. That's
Colts
pretty.
Colts plus 1,400.
Colts isn't terrible. No, okay, there you go. Colts is a. So you got T.Y. Hilton's aging, Michael Pittman, Julio.
And then Jets plus 1,800.
Nah, I'm not interested in that. No, Colts actually, but boy.
I think the Colts and Jacksonville are two very interesting.
But they're
places.
Up against it with Wentz's contract now. I don't know
yeah,
what
Yeah, I mean, you'd have to find a way to make it fit. It's a very expensive contract, which is the whole reason why Atlanta would even be talking about moving off of him. If they do trade Julio Jones, and they'll have Calvin Ridley, they'll have Russell Gage. Kyle Pitts. I think that increases his odds of being rookie of the year if you move off of Julio Jones. So Richard Sherman is currently a free agent, and he isn't ruling out a return to the NFC West. He said Wednesday that a reunion in Seattle is not out of the realm of possibility.
You know, it's always in the cards. I spend my entire offseason in Seattle. That's where I live. That's where my family is. So it's never out of the cards. You know, obviously, Pete and I have had conversations throughout the offseason. It just, everything needs to shake out right. They're still figuring things out. I'm still figuring things out.
That's actually a great fit for him. Richard Sherman in Seattle is because they drafted a corner from Oklahoma, but he's got no length. So they don't have a corner to me that can line up with a length at wide receiver in a division with a lot of good wide receivers.
And obviously, he spent his first 7 years of his career there. He knows that place well. As he mentioned, he lives there.
He
knows Pete. So that's a plug-and-play situation. He only played 5 games with the Niners last season because he had a calf injury.
Also, no state tax. You don't have to. I mean, that's from California tax.
Well, I mean, he lives there. He lives there in the off-season. His family is still there. So it's not like he's, like, moving.
That really makes sense. That's where he should go.
I like the Seahawks, too.
Yeah.
Finally, Joel Embiid has been making a case for MVP this season. And he has the attitude to back up the numbers. He knows he is better than most of the big men in the league, and he finds it comical that opposing teams try to use small ball lineups when he is on the floor. He said, I'm pretty good at guarding the perimeter. I'm better than 90% of the bigs, and I'm better than any bigs when I really try. So I don't have any problems, but if you're going to do that, that means you're going to have to give a lot up on the offensive side. That is true, because he is very difficult to stop.
Now
he is allowing the third lowest field goal percentage on shots from at least 15 feet in a minimum of 30 games played.
Brooklyn's got a couple of issues. Not great chemistry and injuries. Their biggest issue, Embiid and Giannis. Brooklyn does not have an athlete close to defending him. Blake Griffin's not that guy.
It's making me very nervous.
Listen, Giannis, I mean, it's nothing against Brooklyn, but when you have three stars, highly compensated stars, Lakers just have two. When you have three, you are what your roster is. You can't go out and buy your issue.
Yeah.
So, you know, the Lakers can go, we need a point guard. We'll go pay for Dennis Schroeder. But the problem with Brooklyn is they can't defend the rim, and they can't afford to solve it over the next 2 years. Somebody's got to take a pay cut. And by the way, I don't see KD, James Harden, or Kyrie doing it, and I don't think they necessarily should. So I think they have problems that they mostly have to live with and just compensate offensively for.
Well, if everyone's healthy, then it doesn't
matter.
They're
really good.
But, like, they're not. That's the issue. It's similar to the Lakers. Like, they need to be healthy, especially going into the playoffs. I think, to your point, that you really like Milwaukee this year. I'm still not entirely convinced, but I do think this could be Sixers year in the East.
I'm Milwaukee with a right to change my mind in the West, but if LeBron's not healthy, I take the Clippers. With a right to change my mind.
Over the Suns?
Yeah. It's a long leap from crappy to NBA Finals. There's nothing wrong with what Phoenix is doing, but boy, in the history of the league...
I wouldn't necessarily classify them as crappy
last
year.
They weren't very good.
They weren't great, but they had a good showing in the bubble.
They had a good bubble.
Yeah.
They didn't have a good season. They had a good bubble.
So they're developing something there. And Chris Paul, you know, I think Chris Paul and Steph Curry make the strongest arguments for MVP, even though everyone's talking about Jokic.
I think Phoenix will be a tough out, but I don't see them getting over a more veteran team.
I'm very excited for the NBA playoffs this year because it seems like we're going to finally have that year of parity that everyone's always complaining we never have.
This is parity.
Because the Nets have a lot of injuries and the Lakers have a lot of injuries.
LeBron's injury created parity.
Yeah, and the Nets too, because the Nets were the super team, and they're not 100% healthy, and they don't have any defense. So I think fans are finally going to get what they were asking for. It'll be an interesting playoffs.
Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line.
Mike
news.
Silver is highly connected to Aaron Rodgers and the Green Bay Packers. NFL Network's Mike Silver next.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Hey, it's Ben, host of The Fifth Hour with Ben Maller, along with my trusty sidekick, David Gascon. Would mean a lot to have you join us on our weekly auditory journey. You're asking, what in God's name is the Fifth Hour? I'll tell you, it's a spinoff of the Ben Maller Show, a cult hit overnights on FSR. Why should you listen? Picture, if you will, a world where we chat with captains of industry in media, sports, and more every week. Explore some amazing facts about human nature and more. Listen to the Fifth Hour with Ben Maller on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast.
Mike Silver, all right, he's ready to go. Let's join my buddy, NFL Network. As connected as anybody in this business. Follow him at Mike Silver. All right. This whole Rodgers thing, what predates it a little was the rumors about San Francisco and Green Bay. There had been a story that in the summer the Packers talked about it. Can you just give me some information on Niners, Rodgers? Was it real? Because I've read multiple places say it was.
I mean, John Lynch admitted it, right? That they made a call. You know, listen, this kind of blew up on draft day, and you know, if Aaron Rodgers were out there on the free market, obviously the Niners and virtually every other team, maybe not Kansas City and a couple others, but everyone else would at least think about getting in. But that's not really what happened. And you know, if you're Matt LaFleur, who is pretty close with Kyle Shanahan, someone you consider a mentor, you've been going through months of trying to navigate this in a weird position, Colin, by the way, because it's the least collaborative organization by far in the NFL. The coach really isn't involved in a lot of these things and has no power. So Matt LaFleur, who obviously is all in on Aaron Rodgers and wants to keep it rolling and have a third year together and beyond, has been grappling with this. You know, he and Kyle are close. And, you know, I just think if you're Matt LaFleur, you've got to be super frustrated by the way it went down and the fact that in your time of stress and, you know, struggle, your buddy's team was apparently trying to swoop in and grab your guy, even as they were theoretically about to celebrate the drafting of Trey Lance. And apparently more important to them, the fact that they kept it a big secret from people like me. So I'm a little, you know, I think the whole thing is bigger than that, but I do understand, you know, that dynamic. And I think if you're Matt LaFleur, you're not super thrilled with the timing.
I said this before. Aaron doesn't want to go to a team that has to give the Packers a fortune, because then he's going to be a big chandelier in a house with no furniture. It also isn't good for his brand if he's seen as being difficult to the beloved Green Bay Packers in small market title town. He doesn't want to be a jerk. It could hurt his brand. It could hurt his advertisements. I mean, does that matter? I mean, do you think this thing's going to get done before the season?
First of all, I think he's over the hurt his brand thing. I mean, to me, he snapped, right? I mean, even if you don't think that all the reports were 100% reflective of how he feels, he's had ample opportunity to walk it back or say something or put it out there that it's not that bad. So I believe, Colin, that he's got to the point where he's like, I don't care about my brand. I don't care about my, you know, the fact that I seem difficult. And he's probably confident enough in his own abilities that he believes a team that mortgages the future to get him by trading future draft picks, something the Packers have been reluctant to do, that he'll be able to get that team over the top. So, you know, I don't know if it's solvable. And, you know, I think we need to see how some things play out. Aaron could scorch the earth further. He could speak publicly. You know, they could take away his money if he doesn't show up. Other teams could, you know, come at them even though they're not taking offers. They could just bombard the Packers and just go, look, man, we'll give you 4-1s. Let's go. So there are a lot of different ways it could play out. But, you know, is it fixable? Right now it seems pretty bad to me. I guess it's theoretically fixable. But the things that the Packers could have done, I think, to get him in a better place, they clearly have not been able to do, or it wouldn't have come out the way it did.
I've said before, you know, I look at this and I think to myself, he is not of their nature, and Green Bay is not of Aaron's nature, and they've never been able to kind of click. And I think to myself, in the end, it's 16 years. It's time. It's time to move on. I kind of feel like, hey, you know, Brady got tired of New England. If you like today, I look at it and I think to myself, hell, if Jordan Love can't be ready after preseason and camp, isn't that making the argument that Brian Gutekunst whiffed on the first round pick?
Well, okay, so it's a larger question, because normally the coach and GM are sitting together in the room and they have a strategy laid out. Now, they weren't in the same room when the Jordan Love pick was made because of COVID, but you know, usually in most organizations, yeah, one of them has the power, but they're very aligned and they're, you know, in on the plan. In Packer world, it's more like Matt LaFleur found out that Jordan Love was the pick. And listen, I just want to say, in a vacuum, I don't hate the fact that they went up and got Jordan Love. I think it's a smart move to look ahead quarterback-wise, and the kid has a lot of potential, and, you know, maybe that isn't a terrible thing, but clearly the communication to Rodgers before and importantly after has been deficient in his eyes. And it's also the only aggressive move they made the entire offseason. And so basically I think the message Aaron felt he got was, okay, you just swooped up and drafted my replacement. You're not loading up for the present. You clearly are looking ahead to move on. Fine, I'll bite my lip, channel my frustration, make Alan Lazard and Robert Tonyan and all these guys look like stars, and that's not a slight on them. Everyone looks better when you're with Aaron, and try to win a Super Bowl. And then when he fell short against a great quarterback whose team had loaded up around him, he acted out a little bit in the press conference. And I said at the time, I believe his message is, hey, get after it like they get after it for Brady. And they not only didn't get after it, but they didn't do the one thing that could have freed up cap space, given him more money, and assured him, we're not trying to push you out. And that all could have been done with one contract extension. And maybe they offered something, and we don't know the details, but whatever it was that could have solved it with that swoop, or at least made it better, hasn't been able to happen. And then you hear things, you know, we've seen the reports that he was upset that Jake Kumerow got cut, mm-hmm. a you know, a receiver trying to make the team that, you know, he, I guess, thought should have made it. So, again, in a vacuum, you look at that and go, oh, my God, what a diva. He's just whining because he doesn't get to pick the players. Okay, but, A, he said publicly, for better or worse, yeah, this guy's going to make the team, and then they cut him the next day. So I think he probably felt they embarrassed him,
yeah,
and didn't communicate. Secondly, listen, I've been doing this a long time. There are a lot of great players or a lot of important players who've had guys on the team that they wanted on the team. You know, I'll give you an example.
Yeah, hey, we got a mic. We only got 20 seconds.
Okay, Andrew Luck had Griff Whalen on the team for years. I promise you that was management saying, I know that's your guy. He went to Stanford with you. We're going to keep him around.
That was very well done. Very quickly, Mike Silver. Now we got to go. Thanks, buddy.
I filibustered.
Yes. I mean, that's what we do here. All right. Great stuff from Silver. Good insight. Hour 3.